Welcome to the first episode of To the East, My Brother podcast. I am Colin Thompson, and via this podcast, I will share with you my experiences and observations of living here in Shenzhen, China since 2008. Now, just to give you an idea of where I am and where Shenzhen, China is, Shenzhen is actually located in the southeastern part of China. If you're familiar with where Florida is in the United States, I consider Shenzhen to be the Florida of China, one due to the temperature and due to the proximity. Now, Shenzhen is also located right across the river from, right across the water from Hong Kong. So if you know where Hong Kong is, we are a hop, skip, and a jump away from Hong Kong. Now, another reference point to educate you as to where Shenzhen is, as I'm sure most of you have never heard of Shenzhen. Shenzhen is actually the city that manufactures the most cell phones and laptops in the world. So if you're using any sort of Apple product, I want to say any sort of laptop, and pretty much any sort of cell phone, there's a high chance that cell phone was manufactured not just in China, but in Shenzhen, as Shenzhen is a monster of a manufacturing hub in the world. In this podcast today, I will share with you the story of how I arrived here in Shenzhen, China. And I guess I really should not say how I arrived here in Shenzhen, China, because this has been the attainment, I would say, of a lifelong dream of mine to live abroad. And the story of how I was able to actually arrive here in Shenzhen, China, and really continue to go forward with the hard work and that it took me to get here, I'm not going to say that I think it's a compelling story, but I do think it's a story that I want to tell to really share some of the context of my background. Now, I am of Jamaican and Canadian descent. My family is Jamaican. I myself was born in Canada. I am currently still a Canadian citizen. However, I did grow up in the United States. As is the path or culture of most immigrants to a new country, each summer, as I was growing up in the United States, my father and my mother's family actually would visit. Now, typically, the summer is when the kids are out of school. The summer is when the international employers will give their workers time off. So every summer, I'm growing up in Louisville, Kentucky, we'd have family coming to visit us from Canada, coming to visit us from Jamaica, coming to visit us from Indonesia, and even coming to visit us from New York. Now, I know New York is not is not another country, but as the migration for most Jamaicans go, most Jamaicans do leave Jamaica and go to either England, the United States, or to Canada. So we did have a lot of family who left Jamaica and ended up in either Florida or New York. Now, although my family, I should say, was located in New York, in Canada, in Indonesia, when we did get together for the summers, you know, I really got to see, as a young boy, a very different, a hodgepodge, I guess you would say, of culture. By that time, my New York family had adapted some New York flavor to their culture. The Canadian family was still pretty much more Jamaican than anything, you can say. And my Indonesian family, and I say Indonesian family, meaning the family who at the time were living in Indonesia, they really came with some different ideas on culture. When I say ideas on culture, they really had some good stories about living in that part of the world. And of course, we had our Jamaican relatives who came in, and they really had that hardcore Jamaican culture. So, although I was raised in the United States, within the household, it was really a Jamaican culture. The food we ate was more West Indian. The family and the friends who we really had the stronger relationships with were Jamaican as well. Now, the culture that I was exposed to was very different from that of my American friends. Not different in that it was bad or better. It was just different. Once again, going from the foods that we ate, a lot of times my friends would not be able to understand what my parents were saying, and you know, in their strong Jamaican accents, and they'd ask me to translate, which I always thought was funny because English is English. Now I've come to learn that English is not English. There are several different dialects and even phrases that vary from culture to culture. So as a young boy, I was exposed to these different cultures, and I really thought it was cool to live in a different country, to have the opportunity to learn a culture and then fly back to Jamaica, fly back to the United States, and really visit with your family. At least when I was a child, I thought that that's how it was. You're living in a foreign country, you're having fun, you're meeting people, you learn the culture, then you come back to the United States with your family, and you have all these little gifts, these little trinkets, and you really are able to share the culture, and you really get a different take or a different view on what it's like to not be where you are, so to speak, to see people who sometimes think and do things that are different, not right or wrong, but it's different from how you thought things should be done or how you actually go about doing things. So when I was in college, college age, probably, I guess you can say I was probably 18, 19 years old, my father took a job in the Middle East. So he and my mother moved to Qatar to give him the opportunity to work and support some oil companies in the Middle East. I guess during that time, my father became more global in his thinking. Prior to going to the Middle East, my father, and like most nationals, my father was very, very pro-Jamaica. At the same time, though, he was pro-Canada and pro-the United States. And I think this had more to do with there was much more opportunity in North America than you will find in Jamaica, which is one of the reasons why you find a lot of Jamaicans who really work hard and sacrifice to get out of the country. And once they get out, they tend to try to pull their family out as well. Now, with most immigrants, they still do get back to the country, and they still, as the majority of the family, is still in those areas. But going back to my father's experience while he was in the Middle East, one of the things that he developed while he was there is my father really adjusted his views and became much more global in his viewpoints and in some of his comments. My father really started sharing his view and expressing his view that instead of being citizens of one country, we should really consider ourselves to be citizens of the world. Now, what he meant by that is, you know, most of us, in most countries, you're really only allowed to have one passport. At one time, if you were a citizen of the United States, you could not legally hold another citizenship. Now, of course, this has changed, but there are still some countries that will only allow you to have one passport, thus be a citizen of one country. My father was always against that view. He would always say, in Jamaica, if you're born in Jamaica, no matter what you do, you're always Jamaican. So you can become a citizen of the U.S., of Canada, the United Kingdom, but you'll never have to give up a Jamaican citizenship. So when he came back, he was really pro-globalism. Now, I don't know what he was exposed to in the Middle East that helped him change his view, but that also helped me, you know, reconsider, and not necessarily reconsider, but also helped me rethink and remember some of the experiences that I had growing up. And I guess you can say one of the biggest influences that I saw was that when we moved to the United States from Canada, that was the first time I felt different from the local environment, the local culture. In Canada, I think at the time in the late 70s, it didn't matter what country you were from, you were Canadian, and you were viewed as such. When I moved to the United States, it was a little different. That was the first time that I realized that there was a big difference between white and black, a difference between being a minority and not being Caucasian. So when my father came back with this view, it really helped me remember my early goal as a younger child, which was to really get some, not get some, but really to have an opportunity to live abroad. So all of this drove me to really start working on getting there. How can I achieve my goal? Now, as most dreams do, you know, everyday life sometimes leads you to defer your dreams, and you know, you keep putting things off, and you have to get this job, and once you get a job, you're working hard to achieve, to save some money, and somehow in the rigmarole or in every day, you sort of lose focus of what your actual dreams were. Instead of having the dream to go live abroad, your dream now is to buy a house, so your dream now is to get a nice car, and once you achieve those things, it's sort of hard to let those go and go back to other dreams you had. So, long story short, I definitely lost my focus, and it wasn't until, you know, I had a very I guess you can say a very eye-opening, a very important, something happened in my personal life to help me remember about this dream and to really put me back on that track to achieve my goal of living abroad. Now, in 2003, my mother was in her final and losing battle with cancer. Before she passed, she reminded me not to lose focus of my goals, and she really focused on one goal, which was my goal to live abroad. I was always able to share, as most of us are, to share my dreams and my goals with my mother, and she was always one to push me to go after them, after those goals. So after she passed, and after I was somewhat over her passing, I guess you don't really get over a loss like that, but after I was able to really get motivated and get back on top of things, I decided to really start plotting and planning and put my plan together. So now that I had this regained energy, I really said to myself, okay, how do you actually get from where you are to where you want to be? Well, my initial thought, which in retrospect was very naive at the time, was to just move to the country and make it work. Literally, resign from your current job, buy a ticket somewhere, go to that country, and get a job. Now, that was very naive because I realized back then that there are other factors that are also involved, such as visa. As most of us know, if you travel to a different country, you're going to arrive there on a tourist visa. With a tourist visa, you typically cannot work. And a lot of people do actually go to countries and stay for years and years on a tourist visa, but the company you're working for can usually take advantage of you because they're paying you under the table, you don't have the right benefits, and you're there illegally because you have a tourist visa, but you're not afforded all of the rights that you would have if you were there with a work visa. The other fact is, it's very hard to attain a really good job if you do not have that work visa or if you're not there in a more professional nature. So I did speak with some of my friends who also had either goals of working and living abroad or some of my international friends who had immigrated to the United States. And what they really educated me on was that it was much easier to make a transition like this if you go to this new country under the employment of a global organization. Now, what that allows to take place is, typically, the company will sponsor you and your work visa, your residence visa, and in most cases, they'll cover your living expenses. Now, this is typically what takes place when you have a second-line manager or a senior manager with a global organization, and they want the manager to get more global experience so they can come back to the United States at one point and really take up a higher level position. Now, in my organization, I think every VP has had some time, a year or so, 2 years or so, abroad. Now, typically, when you are working abroad for a company, they'll put you on a short-term contract, 1 to 2 years, and at that time, they will cover your living expenses, your children's education, things like that. So it was more important for me, well, I wouldn't say more important, but it was more feasible that I'd be able to go there, or I need to go there, under a global organization. So now I had my idea as to how I could get there, but I had to really take a look at myself, a real hard look at myself, and say to myself, you know, based on your education level, your career experience, how can you get from where you are to where you want to go? Well, after, you know, thinking out the box, thinking about this, thinking about that, I realized that the best way would really be to get my MBA, which would allow me then to have a higher level of education and really try to get on with a global organization. Now, sometimes things are aligned for you in such a way that, you know, I don't want to say it's divine, but it works to your benefit. At the time, I was working as an IT project manager for Howard University. Now, one of the benefits for working for Howard University, besides being in a position to help educate our future leaders and really work for a nonprofit organization, I'd much rather work for a nonprofit than profit, but that's a side note. Howard University will cover will pay for so many credits per semester for their employees, whether you are faculty or whether you are staff. So I decided to go back to Howard University to get my MBA, focusing on two fronts or two disciplines, one being e-business commerce and the second one being supply chain management. Now, both of these translate to any country. When you think about supply chain is necessary globally, and e-business is another discipline that is global. Global in nature, meaning that you're learning the same basics or the same themes, regardless of whether you're being trained in this language or that language. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like math. No matter where you are, 1 plus 1 equals 2. So based on being at Howard University and being able to attain my MBA without getting into a great deal of debt, and being able to focus on two majors that would allow me to go with organization that was more global in nature, it was really the best of two worlds coming together. And one reason I did not want to get into any amount of debt, I felt that if I went to a university and graduated with a high loan amount, I would then be more influenced by getting a job based on high salary with a company that may or may not be global in nature in order to pay off my school loans. So I was able to avoid that debt situation, and in June of 2006, I did join IBM, and I worked in Poughkeepsie, New York for approximately a year and a half. I joined IBM in a managerial rotational program. My last rotation, which was you have four rotations over a two-year time period. My last rotation was here in Shenzhen, China. So January 1st, 2008, I did arrive here in Shenzhen, China. 6 months later, June 30th, actually, of 2008, I resigned from IBM China, and the same day, I joined the local joint venture organization of IBM here in China. Now, back in 2008, in order to have a multinational organization, you had to have a joint venture with a Chinese company. Now, we've since divested, and the company here is 100% owned by IBM. Now, it was also important for me to make sure that I was getting on with a global organization as opposed to a multinational organization. Now, IBM is a global organization. Now, to give you not the main difference, but one of the differences between a global organization and an international organization. An international organization, let's say, for example, they have offices in Paris, Colombia, and the United States. In each of these different countries, different cities, they will have their own operating structure. So they will have a CEO or president in France. They'll have a CEO or president in South America, and they'll have a CEO or president in North America. And each office or each business is really operated differently. Each has their own strategy. Each has their own mission. Now, with a global organization, you typically have one mission, one set of leadership, and each country then has maybe a country leader, but the overall leadership is still coming from the home office. So it was very important for me to go with an organization that had that global office. Reason being, there was more opportunity to have learning through rotations from global organizations, whereas in multinational companies, it's really hard for you to go from working in the U.S. office to the office in France because they are totally different organizations. So it was very important for me to get on with an organization that was global in nature. So once again, I was able to do that, and June 30th of 2008, after much interpretation, and I say that because when I got here in January, from January to June of 2008, that 6 month period, it was an eye opening experience. Very fun, very frustrating, but to sign on a piece of paper that pretty much says I am going to leave the country that I previously spent at that time probably 27 years of my life. Very hard to do that and say I'm going to now move into a country where I know a handful of people and I'm going to make this my new home. But because, like I said before, this was an attainment of a goal that I had really had as a young boy, rekindled as a college student, I had the confidence to know that I could do it. So, as far as achievements go, like I said, it was realizing once again that life is short, and if you're going to go for it now. Then identifying a realistic plan that will allow me to come abroad. Now, initially, I did not pick China as where I wanted to end up. At the time, I was considering Asia, I should say, also considering Africa. Now, I didn't consider Europe because I really wanted to be in a culture that really didn't speak English. Now, of course, in Europe, only a small part of Europe really speaks English, but I've been to Europe, and I guess you can say I just didn't want to go to Europe. No big reason. The culture, even the language is different. I think the culture there is very similar to what you'll find in the U.S. So I did want to go to a culture that was somewhat very drastic than what I was used to in the United States. So, really, when my organization gave me the opportunity, they asked for my opinion on where I wanted to go, but ultimately they told me, you're going to be going here, and then it was up to me to make the most of it. So I've made the most of it, and I'm really, at this point, I'm really glad and still excited that I made that decision. So to summarize, you know, my arrival in China was really the attainment of a lifelong goal that started when I was a child. I lost that, not the passion, but I lost the focus for a while. Then reignited in 2003, where I did realize life is short, and if you're going to do it now. Then working hard to get on at a global organization, and then once joining the organization, really continuing to let my goals be heard to my managers, to everybody who would listen, that I'm looking to get abroad. And once you get abroad, doing whatever you need to do to be able to join the local organization. And that's my story. That's how Colin Thompson got here to Shenzhen. Now, to be realistic, my first 2 years here, I've been here 3.5 years now, my first 2 years here were nothing short of fun, nothing short of frustrating. I want to say, quite frankly, very, very frustrating. The first year was difficult. The second year was also difficult. But now I've hit my stride, and I think because now I understand the culture and I can speak the language a lot better, it's much easier to get along to get on here. But overall, even though it was fun, frustrating, the entire time has been enriching. I've learned so much about myself, learned so much about the culture here in China, and I've even learned more about my culture, because you know, when people here talk to you about the culture in the United States, the Jamaican culture, or the Canadian culture, you kind of forget aspects of it. And certain things that you didn't realize were, you know, were important to them are important. So I learned a lot in this short time period alone. So that's my story. That's how I got here. In the next episode, I will discuss my initial impression of China. I think if I have time during that second podcast, I will also share a very, I call it funny story now, that took place literally the moment I got off the plane here in China. I say funny now because at the time, it was not funny. It was so far from being funny. It was very, very very, very frustrating. But if I do have time in the next episode, I will share that. If I don't have time, that'll be part of the third podcast. So let me once again thank you for taking time to download the podcast. You can always come back here again. Whatever site that you did use to download, please check here for not just the next episode, but all the episodes coming down. And once again, Colin Thompson, this is the To the East, My Brother podcast, signing off. Thank you.